Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 481 for Wednesday, the 20th of January, 2016. I'm Dave Neal in the wilds of North Nottinghamshire on the banks of the River Trent, and joining us back in the Europe this time, I have Harry Lloyd with me today. Hello, mate.
Yeah, I actually had to have a pretty long think about if the last show we'd done, if I was back in Barcelona for it. It's been a bit of a long week at work. And as we'll get to in the news, you know, even though it's still pre-season and no testing's gone on, there's definitely been one or two things that have been happening in the motorcycle racing world.
So, sure thing.
Yeah, this Thursday feels like a bit like next Wednesday. So, yeah.
It was that, me having to remind you where you were last week is just before you got on the big tin tube to come back.
Yeah, exactly. Luckily, jet lag hasn't been too bad for anyone who may be wondering.
Which way is it worse?
It's definitely worse going to Australia. Coming back here, it's basically like, you know, you fall asleep at 9 p.m. and then wake up at 6 a.m. So it's basically just get a nice, full, long and fulfilling day.
Although
in Spain, that doesn't really work because nothing opens here before about 9 a.m. So you're sort of just sat around doing nothing for 3 hours.
But I do notice that you have really embraced the Spanish way of life, because I know you're up a lot later of an evening. And then trying to return that into a morning as well, and trying to wait for things to open and everything else. Just trying to embrace that Spanish culture. It's good to see.
We're trying. I still haven't quite gotten the 2 to 3 hour lunch break down. I still can't quite bring myself to go sit down for a 3-course meal at every lunch. But give it a couple more months and maybe we'll get there.
You don't get a chance to sleep it off in the siesta, do you?
Nah, exactly.
You have to go back to work and work.
Exactly.
Which, like you say, has been busy, as we'll come to in the news. This week, we have a new subscriber, Keelan Carroll. Thank you very much indeed for your subscription. Great to have you along. Hope you're enjoying the show. And also, donator Skylar Vicroy. Martin, your favourite name has returned. Skylar, thank you very much indeed. Always a pleasure to receive those. Thank you for the kudos for that. If you want to subscribe, Harry, how do we do it?
You go to motopodcast.com, and on the left-hand side of the page, there are some PayPal links. You can either become a subscriber, like Mr. I'm guessing it's Mr. Carroll, or you can become a one-time donator like Skylar Vicroy. Obviously, with a subscriber, it's a recurring monthly fee for 12 months. You can select your pay level. There's a couple of different ones there. Or with a donation, it's just a one-time lump of money, big or small. Every little bit does help keep the Motopod train trucking along. We're quite quickly steaming ahead towards 500 episodes, and hopefully we can make it another 500 after that.
I'd like to think so. And after the monster show that we did of episode 400, if we can, keeping things realistic, if there's anybody you'd like to try and really get us to interview on the show, trying to do something a little bit special for episode 500 that we can almost start working on in the next sort of month or two.
Yes, I'm already having nightmares.
we didn't do a bad job last time, did we?
I think it was 8 hours long, and we had to split the episode into two parts.
There were some long interviews and some just long chats between the hosts as well. I think if we can just try and get a little bit something a little bit special on again for 500, which seems to come around really quickly.
Yeah, it is actually quite scary, the time between 400, which didn't seem that long ago, and now we're very quickly staring down the barrel of 500, which I'm guessing will hit at about the mid-season, more or less,
Yeah, middle of summer, it's heading on for that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, if there's anything that you guys want us to do, any races that you'd like have a chat to, and in what context, then by all means, drop us an email to motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to all the hosts. So if you want a specific request, then, you know, just head it up to Len, to myself, to Harry, to Martin, to Jim, to Jules, by all means, and to Scott Bolton as well, I think, who is on the list as well now.
Yes, I think so. And if not, we can certainly forward it to Scott. If you have a specific one for him in regards to Moto America stuff or American racing in general, we have gotten a fair few emails, definitely a lot of responses to my little vision quest that I've started. We'll get to those in a second. But first, we have an email from Thomas H, who had a suggestion for a possible interview, asking if any of us had heard of Jan Thiel or Fritz Overmars. I must confess, I've heard of neither of these people. I'm guessing they're from some sort of Nordic country, judging by the names.
They're going to be Dutch.
Are they?
Yeah. Theo Overmars. There's a footballer, Mark Overmars. He used to play for Holland and Arsenal. And Jan Theo, I would suggest they're Dutch because I've got to confess, I've never heard of them either. That's really bad.
No, but according to Thomas H, they're both two-stroke experts and are well-known for working on the Aprilia RSA 125 race bike, which was probably the most dominant 125cc bike, certainly of its time, if not ever. And Thomas H, those are definitely names that we will look into getting because, you know, as we say on Motorpod, it's sort of those more perhaps obscure interviews that, you know, we really like getting because often some of the more obscure people do have the best stories to tell.
Because, no question.
You know, Valentino Rossi can only say so much. There's only so many questions you can ask.
No, that's true. It's just one of those where I don't have that technical kind of knowledge to talk to these guys. I genuinely don't. I would have to do an awful lot of research. Maybe one of the guys who has a bit more knowledge with regards to engines and the two strokes and how they work and everything. I genuinely don't. I'm regrettably ignorant as regards two strokes. I know what they look like. I know what they sound like, but how they work, I've never gone into the technical side. Have you?
No, not really that much. speaking of technical interviews, Martin Darlington is still working on that Scott Smart interview, so hopefully we'll get that. We do have a couple of pretty cool interviews lined up for the next show, but right now it's back to my Vision Quest. Bit of an update on that. Unfortunately, haven't had a chance to watch any season reviews, so this Vision Quest is already off to a bad start with no update in the first week.
Put it down to a busy week at work. It's fine. We'll forgive you this week at least.
I've penciled in some time on Sunday to hopefully watch at least one season review. But we have had a huge influx of listener feedback as to what they think the best season ever is. Motopod at motopodcast.com if you want to send in your thoughts. I'm sad enough to be keeping an Excel spreadsheet with everyone's votes. So I'll be sure to tally those at the end of this no doubt long process. A little sample for all the listeners out there now. Scott Baldwin, who sent in a couple of emails that we'll get to in a second, he reckons that 2015 was the best season ever. 2015 was a pretty good season.
It was.
Friend of the show, GP Bry on Twitter, says that the 500cc 1989 season, or MotoGP in 2006 or 2015, right up there.
Darren, 89, who won that year?
89 would have
Lawson?
Been... Lawson or Rainey? No, it wouldn't have been Rainey. Yeah, I think it would have been Lawson.
Rainey was 1991 and 92, wasn't he?
I'm pretty sure.
Lawson back-to-back, 88 and 89. Yeah. Gardner in 87.
Let's. 1989, motorcycle world champion.
Okay, while you're doing that...
Yeah, you keep reading, I'll look this up.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, while you're doing that, as we mentioned then 1987 and Wayne Gardner, seamless link, he has just replied to my direct message on Twitter that he will be in touch for our chat on Sunday. And he has a liberal use of emojis in his messages, does Wayne Gardner. So if the guys listening in, if you have a question that you'd specifically like to ask Wayne, we've got a few lined up, a couple of bits and pieces that we want to talk to him about. But if you have a specific question, then by all means, email it in at motopod@motopodcast.com. And depending on how much time he's got, we'll do our best to fire that out to him. Darren, sorry, go on, mate. Have you found it?
Yeah, it was Lawson.
Okay.
So we were right. Darren Moore thinks 1992, another excellent season, obviously 500cc. Scott Holmes says that 2002 in World Superbike was the best World Superbike year, obviously with the legendary battle between Edwards and Bayless culminating in that spectacular last race. 2002 yep. World Superbike, definitely one that I'm looking forward to. John Itter says GP 2006. So, you know, already some front runners emerging there. 2006 and 2015, both
strong. Yeah, got a couple of votes for those, haven't we? That's good.
And I think that, you know, you can definitely see some similarities between 2006 and 2015 in that, you know, it was a close title, a couple of players in there, and most importantly, it went down to the last race, which I think does... certainly add to the majesty of a season.
sure. And there were some good races in those years as well. So and also the subterfuge that went on with it for 2006 with Rossi and his tax implications, and Pedrosa and Hayden and Elias for 2006. Fantastic. So yeah, that's going to be up there, I think, for most people's votes, I would suggest.
Definitely. And now on to Scott Baldwin's email. Scott Baldwin, he responded quite well to my vision quest, and he posed a question to both us, the Motopod hosts, and also you, the Motopod community. He's looking for two specific races. The first, he says, demonstrates the power of ego in MotoGP. I, as in Scott Baldwin, think it was Rossi's first year in the 500 class. I know for sure it was an Italian race. Can't remember which track. Three Italians were battling for the lead at the end of the race. One was a title contender, probably Rossi. The other two were out of the points chase. Last lap, it was apparent to me who was going to take first place. I think it was Rossi. The other two were Italians who weren't going to win. I think they were Biaggi and Caparossi. They were racing in front of their... They were racing in front of their countrymen, two Italian world champions with their egos fully engaged. Whatever track it was had two slow corners. First one, then the other got into the throttle too early and spun out. They crashed fighting for the lead, that was in quotes, in a way which preserved their hero status without hurting their bodies too much. Now, I personally think that that this race is Mugello 2000.
Yep.
And if not, the only other year it sort of can be is Mugello 2001, as those were the only 2 years that Rossi raced a 500. And in both those years, Mugello was the only Italian race. So,
but the 2000 was the year of the Hawaiian, because was it 2000 or 2001 when he had the Hawaiian and he crashed out in the rain?
Yeah, I think it was 2000, and that's what made me think of this, of the spinning out, because Rossi spun out. I think it was coming out of the chicane, I think, is where Rossi spun out, but I'd have to go double check. But he definitely crashed in that Hawaiian livery because it was all a bit of a mess because, you know, it was obviously raining and
it just didn't work. It's one of the few shows that he's put on that hasn't actually worked because it pissed it down all weekend and he spun out of the race.
Yeah, like when James Toseland wore those St George Cross leathers for the British GP and then crashed at the first corner.
Crashed at Redgate. You just don't do. You're putting far too much pressure on yourself when you do things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would agree with you on that one. I would say 2000 Mugello in the wet.
Yes. So that's probably ours. As we said, you know, Motopod at motopodcast.com. If any fans out there have a better idea, then Scott continues. The second also happened at an Italian track. I think it might have been 2002, maybe 2004. Four riders, can't remember who, fought for the lead the entire race, really fought for it, nobody threw in the towel at the end. It wasn't until Oz 2015 that a race was so hot for so long. This was a much harder one to try and come up with, and I had to consult the tomes of Wikipedia. yet again, Mugello was the only Italian race for a fair while until we obviously stepped into Misano a fair bit later.
First year of the four strokes.
Yeah, so 2002, Mugello, Rossi won by 2.4 seconds. And then in 2004, Rossi won by 0.3 seconds from Gibernau. So I sort of thought that it was probably 2004. I haven't had time to go back and watch either of those races, but my preliminary guess was 2004.
The first year on Yamaha. For Valentino.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, Gibernau was quite strong that year, but I can't think of the other two riders who could have been up in that battle. Maybe Biaggi and...
Potentially so. Caparossi, maybe?
Yeah, could have been.
Barros, maybe?
Yeah, Barros. Barros was fighting for the front until his very last race. That dude could race.
He was a racer with a capital R.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's an interesting email. I like that one. Scott, you put a lot of thought and effort into that one. So hopefully we've narrowed it down a touch, but there's still a little bit of work to be done, I think. I need to get that MotoGP.com subscription in so I can help you out.
Yeah, and as we said, you know, Motopod at motopodcast.com. If any other fans out there have any races that they vaguely remember that they want us or any of the other Motopod fans to try and pin down, then we'd be happy to do that. Although, try not to make them too hard because, you know, it makes us feel good when we can get them.
Not a single one we can't. When we get to quite a decent email, the one from Thomas H. If we can pull that one off, I don't know which of the hosts would be the most technically knowledged in that respect or wants to take that on. But I'd certainly like to hear what they say, because it'd be certainly an education for me. And every day is a school day, so that'd be nice to look into.
We will certainly give it our best.
Indeed we will. I think between us we have enough contacts to be able to find someone somewhere who knows them, and we can get hold of them, I'm sure.
Hopefully. And now on to the news. It has been quite a busy news week. We obviously had a couple of bike launches, and unfortunately, young Mr. Jack Miller has broken his right tibia and fibula in a motocross accident. This happened on his 21st birthday. So yeah, it looks almost certain that Miller will have to miss the Sepang test, which is on the 1st of February, which is 10 days from when we're recording this.
Yeah.
He had an operation in Barcelona, and the break has been plated. Miller's initial Instagram was something along the lines of, "I use the rear brake too much anyway, the right foot's overrated." Maybe a bit ambitious, but I think
looking at the Instagram picture of it and the swelling and the size of his ankle, it's just above his ankle bone, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's he's a little bit optimistic, I think, even for young Jack Miller in that respect.
Yeah, so he then later posted a second Instagram where it looks like he'll be trying to get fit for the Phillip Island test, which is 2 weeks after the Sepang test. I think that even that will be quite ambitious.
So what do we have? Three tests in the Southern Hemisphere back-to-back? Sepang 1, Phillip Island, and Sepang 2?
No, there's no Sepang 2 anymore.
It's is there not?
They now just go to Qatar, but there's basically a two-week break between each of them.
Ah, okay. I'd not looked into it that far, so thank you for that.
Yeah, no worries. But yeah, hopefully Jack will be more or less fully fit for the start of the season.
I think he needs to. It's a big season for him, really. I think he needs to. He's got to show some mettle this season and start really worrying the top 10.
These three tests would have been really helpful for him stepping to a new bike with new tyres and a new team. I think would have benefited a fair bit more than most.
Yes, certainly. But if he's losing 3 days on track, 2 days on track, any time on track is going to be a little bit of a stab in the dark for him for that. So hopefully he can be fit and well for the Phillip Island test. And if he does try and ride at Sepang, then hopefully he can make some inroads. But we shall wait and see on that one. On Monday, over in your neck of the woods, the Yamaha launched the new M1. Lots of people on social media, what's it going to look like? What's it going to be? And we're really looking forward to this. And really, most people realized that it was just going to look the same as the old one.
Yeah.
Externally, in its dress anyway. In racing dress, it looks almost identical to the old one. There were no massive sponsor changes.
Yeah, big team with big sponsors. It's going to be, you know, Repsol Honda bike is always going to look pretty much the same as it did when Mick Doohan rode it.
Exactly. So it's we kind of knew what was coming, and there was a bit of an interesting Q&A after the launch. It seems Valentino's still continuing his bitterness about 2015, but also says that the top four may be challenged by other riders, which I would suggest would be Iannone and possibly Dovi. And he really believes that the Suzuki will be strong this year.
Yeah, I think that especially Vinales on that Suzuki could be there or thereabouts. You know, obviously I don't think he'll be there every race, but I think that when Vinales and the Suzuki gel with a circuit, I think they could be sort of hassling for that top five.
Which would be great to see, and especially for the young gun as well. I think that'd be superb. Mm. I think the top four, it's certainly closer to a top five and six than it has been previously. Yeah. Now the Ducati are bringing their A game, and they're getting closer, and they were last year. And One's got a big season ahead of him. Dovi, possibly not. But you had those three bikes and potentially Espargaro. You've got four bikes fighting for fifth place, and it's going to add to the spectacle a little bit more and bring those times down between everybody, as we said last week. So hopefully we can have five quote-unquote aliens at the front. But we don't hold out much hope, because is it since Phillip Island 2010 there's only a Honda or a factory Honda or a factory Yamaha won every race?
Yes, and
I don't expect that to change anytime soon.
And since Casey Stoner won at Phillip Island on the Honda, every race has been won by either Valentino Rossi, Marc Marquez, Jorge Lorenzo, or Danny Pedrosa.
Yes. So the odds aren't really in anybody else's favour.
No. If you can crack those four guys, then you are definitely doing your job as a motorcycle racer very, very well.
Or there's going to be some team manager marching up to race direction with a protest form in his hand.
Yep.
But yes, it will be an interesting season. For Jorge Lorenzo, he said he takes confidence from being the top Spaniard from 2009 to 2012, and the fact that he was the only rider to beat the Hondas from 2010, rather than taking his confidence from beating Valentino to the title last season. He seems to be sort of edging towards the fact of being top Spaniard rather than beating his bitter rival.
Yeah, I can't remember which website had the quote, but Jorge Lorenzo did some interview and he made it quite clear that the confidence he got from 2015 was from beating Marc Marquez, not from beating Valentino Rossi in 2015. So I think Jorge Lorenzo feels that Marc Marquez will be a bigger challenge. Obviously Marc Marquez is going to be a bigger challenge, you know, from 2017 onwards. But yes. I think that he Lorenzo also feels that Marquez will be a bigger challenge in 2016. Although there have been some really interesting reports and rumors coming out that maybe Honda are doing a radical engine redesign, and that although Marquez and Pedrosa might be getting this radical new engine, that the satellite Hondas may not get the new Honda engine until the first race in Qatar.
Ah,
that was that came out. I think that came out of the Spanish press, and Moto Matters has an article up on that. So if you go scroll around on his site, you should be able to find that. But yeah, because you know the engine was the big weak point of the Honda last year.
It was, which is usually the positive point, isn't it? But they need to do something to make that work. And obviously, with the new tyres, the new electronics, it's going to be a big learning curve for everybody. And these tests, I don't think the tests, as Jim always says, it's just testing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people tend to read far too much into testing, because usually there's an odd little result somewhere. There's an odd fast time for somebody. You don't know what they're running, fuel loads, tyres, and everything else. The first time that we'll see it all work is for Q2 at Qatar.
Yeah, and you know, testing, especially now with you know so many things changed, it is going to be pretty crazy. You know, some teams are going to be focusing on getting the tire life out of the new Michelin, whereas you know some teams, probably satellite teams, are going to try and in testing, you know, set that one fast lap so that you know Daniele Petrucci can lead day two of testing, and you know then he gets Primack a lot of exposure. But you know if Petrucci's leading day two of testing, is he going to have the race pace over 18 races? Probably not.
And you have the ego issue as well, that you want to bang that very fast lap in on the very last minute just to finish the session at the top, because that's what people see, but it doesn't show the full story by any stretch.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Pramac Ducati and Daniele Petrucci, they also had their team launch. Pramac have gained a title sponsor and go from being Pramac Racing to Octo Pramac Racing to now being Octo Pramac Yaknik. obviously, Yaknik Motorsport were the team that took Sam Lowes to World Supersport glory in 2013. Not quite sure the exact involvement of Yaknik in the Pramac operation, but the Pramac bikes, which look quite good. Now have a blue stripe down them. Scott Redding was quite optimistic that he thought that was due to him being British and that they were a bit of a British motif. However, I think it's more reflective of the Russian flag.
I think so too, but there is a little bit of red, white and blue there if he wants to be a little bit on the patriotic side.
Yeah, as long as it makes him feel good.
That's all that matters. I mean, he's happy with the bike. He said the bike's insane. We immediately clicked. He said, but also quite tellingly, he said the team have high expectations, but don't put pressure on him. Was that a nod to last season? I don't know.
It could be. I think that Mark VDS was certainly expecting more from... I think that both Mark VDS and Scott Redding were expecting more from 2015 than they got.
Sure. I think so too. Petrucci, he has a great desire to do better. He didn't have a bad season overall, and he was third at the Jerez test after making big improvements on the bike from the Valencia test. So he'll be doing his best to get out there and to be worrying the guys in the top 10, certainly, is going to be Petrucci's aim, I would suggest.
Yeah, Redding said he's really aiming for top sixes, and Petrucci was slightly less ambitious and said, you know, top 10s will be good enough.
Top 10's fine. It's not a satellite Ducati. I think top 10 would be pretty cool.
Yeah, and, you know, especially with, in theory and on paper, all of the bikes being a lot more equal, I think that that fight for the top 10 is going to become less certain. That, you know, it's not just always going to be, okay, the Tech 3 bikes will be 5th and 6th, then it'll probably be the two Hondas. I think it now will be a lot more mixed up.
It's not going to be Formula 1.
Hopefully not.
It's never ever going to be Formula 1 in the fact that they all finish in a similar parade fashion. All the bikes are equal, it's just that some are more equal than the others.
Exactly. Tom Lutie will be hoping to make the KTM MotoGP machine a little more equal than others, as he'll be doing a couple of test days for KTM throughout 2016. Tom Lutie has actually tested a 1000cc bike before. In 2006, he got a couple of runs on the Honda MotoGP bike.
Ah, I'm looking to. I haven't seen the new KTM. Have we got pictures released yet? I haven't quite seen it.
Yeah, it looks a lot like a Honda, which is surprising because Mike Leitner, Danny Pedrosa's former crew chief, is now working for KTM.
He's now working for KTM. Okay, he has a huge amount of experience. So that bike will certainly not be slow, I would suggest, if you've got Mike Leitner wheeling the spanners and organizing things and pushing forward.
No, and I also had read somewhere that KTM were hoping to do a wild card at Valencia this year, which could be really impressive to see.
That'd be good in the first season of coming of their newborn project. I think that'd be great if they could get it out there.
Exactly. It took Suzuki a good two seasons before they did that wild card.
Yeah.
Which, and their wild card unfortunately didn't end well, as I think Depugno blew up about six engines.
He did, yeah. Not good. Not good at all. The final release that we had this week was the Pata Crescent Yamaha World Superbike R1. I have to say, that looks beautiful.
It's it is
stunning,
nice and simple.
Stunning. Yeah, that's right. You've got the Pata sponsorship down the side. The T misses out a little bit. But such is the way that fairings are designed these days. It's not like the old days where you had the old slab-sided fairings where you could get whatever you wanted and the number on the side. Unfortunately, with air vents and everything else, you have to make do. But it's the beautiful blue and white with the Pata on the side. So Lowe's and Gintoli have a beautiful machine to go with this season. I think I'm still not sure how they're going to run.
I don't think either are going to be title contenders, in all honesty. I think that Lowe's will be top five at the end of the season and will probably pick up at least a couple of wins. But I think in the first year of that bike, I'm not sure it can challenge for a title against, you know, Jonathan Rea, Tom Sykes and Chaz Davies, who I personally think will be the big three for that title.
Yeah, no question. Andrea Dasoli, Yamaha's World Superbike Project Manager, he said, we know 2016 will be a learning season for us. We want to approach the championship step by step and understand our level compared to the other guys. So that shows their intent. You know, they're not going to go out there and try to win from the off because they're not sure where their level is at the moment. I mean, I want to go down the Milwaukee Yamaha route, but that's dead and buried. So I would like to have seen Sean Muir and his team take that forward. But let's see what Crescent can do. All power to the guys for that. And if they have the right engineers, I know how hard it was to get the R1 into BSB spec. This is a little bit different spec for World Superbikes. So they have a fair amount of work to do on the Yamaha R1. But if any team can do it, then Paul Denin and the Crescent boys can certainly do it.
Yep. In more World Superbike news, MV Augusta looks set to run just one World Superbike rider. That's Leon Kamea. I saw an interview with Leon Kamea where he said Marco Melandri joining the team would be a negative. So Kamea making his feelings heard loud and clear, straight to the point.
Has Leon Kamea blackballed Marco Melandri by any chance?
I think a lot of people have blackballed Marco Melandri, to be honest.
Yeah, fair shout.
So alongside the one World Superbike MB, there'll be seven riders in World Supersport: Baldellini, Tirol, Rolfo, Gino Rea, and Aidan Wagner, the Australian, are just some of them. So a fair few World Supersport machines. Obviously, Cluzel as well, looking to challenge for the title after having his title challenge in 2015 fade when he busted himself up pretty good at, I think that was at Jerez, if memory serves. And certainly in World Supersport, the MV is a proven race winner and proven competitive machine. And Kamea made good inroads in World Superbike with it last year, getting there. I think he had a top five in MagniCore.
But he has the experience there now, doesn't he? He's ridden a decent cross-section of motorcycles in World Superbike and over his career. So I think he can now get to that point where he can develop the MV to what he wants and try and get some work done on it to bring it further into that top 10 and into that and be a regular top five campaigner, which is obviously what MV Agusta want to see. And I, fingers crossed, Leon can do that on a more regular basis this season.
Yeah, they definitely had one or two mechanical problems last year. So I think that if they can get over that hurdle, then that will be quite a big thing.
I think that was MV as a whole, wasn't it, on the reliability side, whether it was with the Qingdao boys over here in the UK or whether it was the World Supersport team and the World Superbike team. But by all accounts, if you look at what MV have been doing and what Qingdao, there was a big test, I think, at Cartagena where all the MVs were out, including the Brit guys of Jake Dixon and Joe Collier. So it was quite a large test, and they were pooling their knowledge, and I think there's a huge push this season from MV to go for success on all fronts.
Yeah, they're definitely making a big push, and it seems like both MV and Ducati, as we'll get to in just a second, they're sort of bringing the BSB teams into the World Superbike fold a bit more, and you know, getting the BSB teams to maybe help them out a bit with, you know, maybe testing some stuff and certainly just gathering more data from all of the bikes they have out there.
Yeah, there's some experience in that field, so why not bring them all together and see? Because you're getting different data from different people, and then maybe something somebody else feels, maybe shaky or somebody like that, or somebody who's real brand new to it, such as Glenn Irwin. So it's good that they're bringing it a lot more into the fold in that respect. But there is a big World Superbike test at Portimao this week, isn't there, with all major teams present, which includes PBMB Wiser Ducati with Shaky and Glenn Irwin, and also Moto Rapido with Danny Buchan.
Yep, so hopefully we'll get some good testing times from that test. I don't think it's an official World Superbike test, so I can't be 100% certain that there'll be official timing, but I'm sure that we'll at least get some press releases with some dodgy stopwatch times on them.
I'm sure there will.
Expect lap records to be broken by at least a second.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's that little PR competition, isn't it? A little bit of willy waving going on. And it's like, yeah, we're going to do this. Yeah, well, we're going to do this. But it's just nice to know that there's going to be bikes going around in circles really fast somewhere in the world. It's getting to that time of year. So that's always a good thing. Speaking of going around in circles really fast, Kyle Ride, who put in a great show at the British World Supersport round back in May, he will ride in World Supersport this year. He's announced on social media. I think that was kind of his hand was forced a little bit on that because one of the websites had posted a rumor that he was going to be riding for the return in Yaknich Motorsport, who we mentioned earlier on with the Pramac Ducati. The Sam Lowe's team returning to World Supersport, but he came out to scotch those rumors, but then he did confirm that he will be riding in World Supersport this season, and we're just waiting to find out who with.
Yeah. And, you know, what he did in that wild card where he scored, where he finished second behind Keenan Sefoglu was very impressive. And I think Keenan Sefoglu himself said to Kyle Ride, hey, you need to get yourself into World Supersport. So Ride's definitely one to watch. You know, the World Supersport field can be a bit iffy if you don't get the right team. So I hope he has signed for a solid team that will do right by him and give him the bike and the package that he needs to try and challenge towards the front, because I think he can be up there with Cluzel and with Sefoglu, as he showed at Donington or Silverstone?
Donington,
yeah.
And also another Brit in the championship as well, as he joins Luke Stapleford, who's joined Simon Buckmaster's CIS team, Gino Rea on the MV, and Kyle Smith, who's also at CIS, isn't he, with the Buckmaster?
Yes. Two Brits. Wait, no, there's another Brit as well. What's the kid's name? Stephen Hill.
Oh, of course. Stephen, he's stepping up from the EJC?
Yes, I think so.
He is, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. It's hard to keep a track of all of these riders. But yeah, lots of Brits to look for in World Super Sport. Moving back up to the big bikes in the World Super Class. That is World Super Bikes. That was a poorly phrased sentence. Altea BMW have launched their new colour scheme with Jordi Torres and Rita Berger. I personally think that the colour scheme looks very cool. It's nice matte white and black scheme, a bit like a NASA rocket ship. And yeah, I reckon that's a pretty trick bike.
It looks really good. And I know Ollie Rushby at Bennett's, he posted a picture of it earlier on, and he was sort of, Milwaukee BMW, over to you. Because it really does look a little bit special. But please, if I send you an email, Harry, can you forward it on to the World Superbike bosses, please?
Depends what it says.
Get rid of those fucking headlight stickers.
Yeah, those are pretty grim.
I'll say that, because I know you can't, but I can.
No, that's actually one really good thing about the new Yamaha R1, is because it has those sort of stupid-looking headlights.
Yeah, the ray gun headlight.
Yeah, you can't see it on the World Superbike bike, so it just looks like a race superbike, because the stickers are so small.
Yeah, it conveniently looks like a race bike. Fantastic. Who'd have thunk it? So yeah, if we could get rid of the sticker, they've done a good job, and yeah, they were great idea. Thanks very much, but let's go back to them being a proper race bike, please.
Yeah, they do seem a bit overkill. Like, you know, we get it, it's a production bike, you know.
Yeah. We know what we're doing. The guys, don't insult the fans. They know what they're looking at.
Yep. Whack some paper mache rear vision mirrors on there.
And a nice little tail tidy. This is going the whole hog. It's fine. Not a problem. And something that's come out this week as well. Finland are looking to host a MotoGP race in either 2017 or 2018. Oh, please be a Matra. Please be a Matra. That's in Finland, isn't it?
I think
in
so.
It's Finland, wasn't it?
Yeah,
over the railway tracks.
God. Railway tracks and snow with Finland. I'm not quite sure, when a Finnish round could fit into the MotoGP calendar, as MotoGP is already looking to go to Indonesia. I'm not sure that anyone from the press, fans probably could handle it, but from the press or from the riders, I don't think any of those people could handle a 20-round championship.
No. But isn't Finland fairly sparsely populated as well? It's a big old country and fairly sparsely populated. So
yeah, there's a lot of ice and snow. Yeah, I get the impression.
It's just cold.
Yeah, it's a bit of an unusual one. Obviously, they had Saarinen, who was, you know, quite successful, and they had Kallio, who had his success. But
sure,
when you think of Finland, you don't really think of it as a MotoGP country. You know, you certainly think of more as Indonesia, as definitely a country that would have a big MotoGP.
Wondering what the market's going for there, but you think of Finland, you think of rallying.
Yeah, certainly. Or even F1, you know, Finland has had quite a few successful F1 drivers.
True, I
mean, you know, we'll see how this plans out. You know, right now it's just preliminary talks. But definitely something to keep an eye on if we do go to Finland, which would definitely be a unique experience. I think the last Finnish GP was in like 87 or something like that.
Possibly earlier. We'll have to check on that one.
Yes, another one to check. I'll let you.
But then they did have Anderstorp at Sweden, didn't they?
Yeah. That was
mid-80s. Anderstorp. So, you know, there have been up that neck of the woods before, so it should be interesting to see how that one develops, if indeed it does.
Yeah, exactly. That's the big thing, is that, you know, there's a lot of places that say, oh yeah, we'd like to host a MotoGP round, or, you know, like Hungary, where, oh yeah, we'll build a track. Oh, sorry guys, it's not quite done.
Hopefully we'll get there one day, maybe. We'll see.
I still think the Hungaro ring is just... It wasn't the Hungaro... Whichever track we were meant to go to in Hungary, I think it's still just dirt.
The Balaton ring?
Yes, that was it. Balaton ring. Not Hungaro ring. Hungaro ring is finished.
Hungaro ring was the old one. Yeah. You're going back to Austrian Salzburg ring time now, aren't you? You're going back to the mid-80s. You're really living in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
At least I can remember the mid-80s.
I'm preparing for my vision quest. I'm trying to visualize myself.
Mate, you're preparing really well. I'm proud of you. I think you're doing a grand job. Speaking of preparing really well, Honda BSB Racing, Jason O'Halloran, friend of the show, he returns to testing this week after his huge accident at Thruxton in August, where he broke his femur and his wrist quite badly. He's going to ride the stock 1000 bike to dust off the cobwebs before running the superbike in. So it'd be good to see Jay back on a bike. Great guy, and hopefully we'll have him back on the show at some point this year. Speaking of Honda in Lincolnshire, in particular, my own fair county, Guy Martin has announced he won't be racing at the Isle of Man TT in 2016.
Yes,
so this is no Northwest 200 and no TT for Guy Martin.
Yes, this is probably pretty big news, maybe even the biggest news of the week. Obviously, Guy Martin fan favourite at the TT. You know, he himself probably attracts a fair few people. But yeah, he'll be foregoing the TT this year to instead do a push bike race from Canada to America. MCN and most websites have all the details on that. But, you know, he basically just said, need a bit of a change of scenery. But if he does race any more in 2016, and you know, any of the slightly smaller races after the TT, then it will be with the Tyco BMW squad. Yeah. It'll be quite interesting to see if Tyco do bring in a second rider to replace Guy Martin at the TT, or if they focus all of their attention on Ian Hutchinson, who has joined them.
I think possibly they might focus everything on Hutchie and give him the all the weapons that he can to add to his TT tally. I think if Guy does come back and do the smaller races, I think he'll certainly do Scarborough. The Gold Cup, possibly the Ulster, and things like that. So I think he still enjoys doing those, but the TT, yeah, he's going to go off and do it's a 2 week.
Yeah, it's something mountain crazy.
It's like 2,000 miles or something. I know he's in it from America to Canada, which, you know, if you go over Niagara Falls and go that way, it really isn't that far. But he's going all the way down the Rockies or something daft. It's just a ridiculous race. Is it the Tour Diversion or something like that he's doing?
Yeah, something like that. And it's meant to be the hardest, you know, push bike endurance race in the world. And I'm going to guess that there's probably going to be a TV show to go along with this in a couple of months.
James Woodruff and the crew that are behind him for North One TV, I'm sure they'll be following him down along the route at some point. But I mean, he's gone off to Scotland and done 24-hour mountain bike races and stuff like that. So he's an incredibly well-accomplished mountain bike rider. So I think, you know, he's not entering this lightly.
No, certainly. So yeah, and it's, you know, it's something he wants to do. And he from the post he made on his Facebook page, you know, he's going to start preparing for it and prepare for it properly with trainers and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's not like he's missing the TT just to, you know, have a bit of a piss about. He's taking it very seriously and seems to want to do as well as he can in this super crazy push bike race.
Yeah, we'll bring you news of that as he goes on and keep a track of Guy. And well, I've never heard of the race before, so it'll be interesting for us to keep an eye track on things and see where it goes. But hopefully some of the guys listening over the pond, you guys will know what's going on with that. If you're into your mountain biking, you'll have heard of the race and know how difficult it is, so maybe you can appreciate a little bit more. By all means, email in motopod@motopodcast.com if you can shed a little bit more light on that race for us.
Yeah, and if you're going to that race, you know, be sure to say hello to Guy Martin and give him a Motopod sticker if you have one.
Sure thing. Hey, what I did see the other day, I got a fantastic email from Bob Hagar over in Vancouver Island, who I met at Alton Park back in September, and his son Everett. Everett had preparing his bike for his little club and racing season that's coming up, and he'd got the box and everything ready, and there it was, the Motopod sticker with the UK flag. So we will be on road racing circuits around Canada this coming season, courtesy of Everett Hagar.
We're a proper race team now.
And I'm going to see if I can throw some at that arena cross in a month or so's time. Let's see what we can find there as well.
Very promising.
We should see.
I think that's pretty much a show. As we said, we'll hopefully have a couple of interviews next week. But it's been a pretty busy, little action-packed week in news. No doubt things will continue to happen. As riders continue to forget that motocrossing is a very good way to hurt yourself and
it is
maybe not the best way to train.
And I wonder, did anybody notice that the title of the show last week of Changes, a little nod to the passing of David Bowie on the Wednesday that we recorded the show?
I don't know. No one sent in any.
No, nobody mentioned it. That was my idea. It's like, for fuck's sake, cheers. So much thought went into that. I'm pleased you guys take notice of the show. The only one that really got a mention was 404, error not found. I think because most of the guys that listen in were like, we understand that. That's really funny.
The silent ones are the ones who appreciate you the most, Dave. Don't worry.
Yeah. that goes back to the Axel Pons fan club and the phone box. I have mine as well.
Axel Pons. Oh, I wonder what 2016 will hold for Axel Pons.
That's lots of fiberglass.
Okay. With that, I think it's time to end the show.
We should go. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. I think maybe Martin should be back next week, or yes, Maybe myself, Harry. There'll be some concoction of hosts. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you again soon.
Bye, everyone.
Cheers. Bye-bye.